It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
I believe that in order to further the policies that these primarily federal laws, but there are some state laws, the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayers Act being one, further these policies, the truth is that without internal whistleblowers who expose this, the public gets cheated of the money. People who are given the public trust of these financial services dollars or these securities dollars and who misuse them would likely never be found out. There's some testimony that recently to, I believe it's a Senate subcommittee, that said that of the recoveries of this type of, I think this was financial services fraud, that something like 41% of the fraud was uncovered by whistleblowers and audits. And, you know, all companies are required to have internal and external auditors, and they do a very good job. But auditors in those same situations only uncovered something like 4% of the fraud. So where companies are trying to deceive the government or deceive the regulatory bodies, I think they are much more successful in doing that unless somebody on the inside comes forward to expose it.
Private attorney and friend of the show, Harris Butler, talks about the rights of workers to blow the whistle on wrongful conduct by their employers, as he discusses the whistleblower statutes that protect employees who report unsafe or unhealthy working conditions. And during this week's News You Can Use, we talk about how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is exploring ways to help consumers avoid overdraft penalty fees and assist borrowers with private student loan complaints. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 160, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last month, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, launched an inquiry into checking account overdraft programs to determine how these impact consumers. The CFPB is seeking public input on a sample penalty fee box, a disclosure on a checking account statement that would highlight the amount overdrawn and total overdraft fees charged. An overdraft occurs when a consumer spends or withdraws more money than is available in his or her checking account, and the financial institution advances funds on the consumer's behalf. Banks generally charge an overdraft fee for each transaction that they choose to cover. For debit card and ATM transactions, regulations by the Federal Reserve Board prohibit a bank from charging the overdraft fee unless the consumer has opted in. For check and online bill payments, as well as recurring debits, banks can charge an overdraft fee without any affirmative request from the consumer. In 2011, the average overdraft fee ranged between $30 and $35 and has increased by 17% over the past 5 years. A 2008 study by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation found that consumers who overdrew 20 or more times per year paid an average of $1,610 in overdraft fees annually. In other news, this month the CFPB opened the student loan complaint system. Student loan borrowers face many frustrations with their lenders, servicers, and debt collectors, and for many Americans, paying off student loans is a real challenge. For several years, federal student loan borrowers have had the Department of Education's Federal Student Aid Ombudsman to help bring their concerns to financial institutions. However, private student loans, which don't always carry the same consumer protections as federal student loans, have been overseen by a patchwork of government agencies. As of March 5, 2012, the CFPB also will assist borrowers with private student loan complaints. This means a single federal agency is now responsible for watching out for all students and families who choose to borrow private student loans. If you file a complaint, the CFPB will work with your lender or servicer to get a response. The CFPB also has an online tool, the Student Debt Repayment Assistant, to help you navigate the maze of student loan repayment options, as well as Know Before You Owe, a financial aid shopping sheet for schools to improve the student loan information they give to students. For more information, go to www.consumerfinance.gov. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Buchanan versus Orange. In August 1911, Mrs. G.T. Orange entered into a written 5-year lease with D. Buchanan and Son to rent the second floor of a brick storehouse on Broad Street in the city of Richmond to be used as a millinery establishment. The lease included water, light, and heat in the rent. For 3 years, she complained about inadequate light and heat and finally gave written notice and moved out. The landlord sued her for the remaining 2 years' rent on the lease, and the tenant defended by saying she had been constructively evicted and owed no additional rent. Both the Circuit Court and the Supreme Court of Virginia agreed with the tenant. The courts ruled that an actual expulsion by the landlord was not necessary, and that any act of the landlord which so disturbs the tenant's enjoyment of the premises as to render them unfit for occupancy is an eviction, and that this released the tenant from the duty to pay rent thereafter. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Buchanan versus Orange is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in Shaco Slip near downtown Richmond at the law firm of Butler Royals, and we're speaking with private attorney and friend of the show, Harris Butler. And we're going to be talking about whistleblowing today. Welcome back to the show, Harris.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Nice to have you back. Will you tell our listening audience, what is whistleblowing?
Well, whistleblowing is the law's way to protect somebody who says something that's really in the public interest, but might end up in their own personal disinterest or create personal problems for them with their employment. So the idea is that where somebody's speaking out on something that is for the public good, they shouldn't lose their job or be otherwise penalized for really being a do-gooder.
So why do we have whistleblowing laws anyway? Could you give us a little bit of history there?
Whistleblowing laws date back to the Civil War. There was, around the time of the mobilization by the Union for the war, a lot of federal contracts were put out for arms, munitions, everything in the war effort. And a lot of people figured out that enough money was being thrown at this in a very small amount of time that a lot of fraud arose. A lot of people cheated the government. They provided weapons that didn't work, things that just flat had no value to the government. And so after the war, Congress enacted the False Claims Act, and it says that where somebody has defrauded the government, not provided the service or the quality of product that was contracted by the government, then a whistleblower could receive a percentage of the recovery by the government for the fraudulent product or service. And that has carried through to today and actually recently was beefed up a little bit in the recent legislation to protect against, you see it a lot in defense contractor situations. We've seen it in the pharmaceutical industry for off-label marketing where something is labeled or marketed for something other than that which FDA has approved. And so the notion is, you know, and it's a significant amount, 15 to 25% of the amount that was charged the government, that the government paid but didn't receive the value, can be recovered by a private individual who blows the whistle on it. So that's kind of the nature where we get whistleblowing. The state of Virginia, the Commonwealth, has enacted a similar law, the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayers. So it not only provides a financial incentive, but it also protects against retaliation where, for instance, if you're an employee of a government contractor and you know of a, let's say that the Defense Department has contracted for a part in a plane, and the part doesn't work or is defective somehow or uses substandard steel or some other something that was required of the contract. And if the employee reports this and they are fired, this act provides protection to the employee. And the types of protection that these acts usually provide are an order by the court that they should not be further retaliated against. If they've been fired, they can be reinstated. They can receive their back pay. If the circumstances are such that the court feels reinstatement is just not appropriate, the court can allow front pay instead of reinstatement. Usually, attorney's fees and cost of the employee's efforts to get relief under the statute is provided. So, you know, a pretty broad range of relief.
Well, now, are all employers and all employees covered by whistleblower statutes, or are only some employers and some employees covered? Or is that just too broad and general a question to be answered?
No, it's actually a very good question. The whistleblowing statutes are really directed to certain categories of employment. So it's not an across-the-board protection for any employer. Let's say somebody, you know, in a non-regulated industry, and we'll talk about where these laws apply, but let's say it's in an industry that doesn't apply and somebody sees something that's wrong and says to their employer or says to an outside agency or somebody, I think this is wrong, and they're fired. They would have no protection under these whistleblower statutes for that. Now, in certain circumstances, they may have some common law protection. If the employee can argue that this would be contrary to public policy, there might be an exception to the notion in Virginia that employment is at will. But most of these laws are directed to, like the False Claims Act and the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayers Act, to providers to the government of services. There's been other laws recently after the financial markets collapse. There have been laws that speak to insider trading, that speak to the financial services industry, that speak to commodities trading. And so basically anybody who touched stimulus funds under TARP, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA, anybody who received those funds is subject to whistleblower protection for mismanagement of those funds.
Is it fair to say that if an employer gets some form of government funding, whether it's federal government funding or state government funding, that it is likely that the employees of that company are going to have some form of whistleblower protection?
In a lot of those situations, yes. I mean, more often than not, most of these are tied to, in the financial industry, certainly the bailout money is tied to that. In the contracting, government, state, and federal contracting, it's certainly tied to that. The other places, though, where it's not tied to funding is like the securities industry. Sarbanes-Oxley, people may have heard of that law. But that also provides protection against whistleblowers who expose fraud in publicly traded companies.
So is it also fair to say that even if an employer doesn't get federal or state money, but they're subject to some form of federal or state regulation, that it's likely in those situations there will be whistleblower protection?
More often than not, particularly in the securities and the financial industry, securities, both the commodity trading and the securities markets, publicly traded companies under Sarbanes-Oxley, financial services industries. But the goal here is that Congress has these statutes that protect the public. Securities industry is one good example. And a lot of this, because it's fraud, would go unseen without somebody on the inside blowing the whistle.
What about health and safety complaints like OSHA? Would whistleblower protection also apply in those situations?
They can. To liken it to several of the anti-discrimination laws have retaliation protection. In this case, the workplace safety laws. Again, if the government, the regulating bodies don't know about the violations and somebody on the inside reports the violation, then the logic of the law is that that person shouldn't lose their job over reporting something that's in the public interest.
So how should a whistleblower go about blowing the whistle? In other words, to whom should they complain? How should they complain? Are there time limits for complaining? Lead us through that process.
Each of the acts have different places that receive the complaints. For instance, the securities industry, generally you file those complaints with the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. The False Claims Act, state and federal, require reporting to the Attorney General, state Attorney General or federal Attorney General. At least for False Claims Act, there's a very precise procedure. And if you don't follow the letter of the procedure, you can waive your rights to what's called relator status. The person who relates the information to the government is called the relator. If the relator tells everybody in the world, for instance, as opposed to just going to the right authorities to report it, then they may have destroyed their relator status. The idea on at least False Claims Act cases is you file the complaint with the Attorney General. The Attorney General then investigates without the employer knowing they're being investigated. And the employee may file a sealed complaint. So it's filed in court, but it's sealed. Again, for the purpose of the Attorney General looking into it and deciding if the government wants to join the case or not. At some point, that complaint becomes unsealed and the employer knows about it and either defends the case against the employee or defends the case on behalf of the employee and the government. But because it's so important for the government to investigate this confidentially, the individual can lose their relator status by telling the employer, for instance, they're being investigated or threatening, say, if you do this to me, then you know the government's going to come after you because I've given you all this information. So it's for those reasons, it's probably advisable to either talk to a lawyer or talk to somebody in the Attorney General's office, in the example, again, of the False Claims Act, who knows the very precise rules that apply for those types of complaints. In other forms of complaints, you know, most of the complaints, the body you report to is the regulatory authority.
So, in other words, whoever regulates the industry or is handing out the money to the industry, that would be a pretty good place to start?
Right. Department of Labor, in many of these statutes, the Department of Labor is the place that you go. But the statutes are somewhat confusing in terms of what are the rules that apply in each situation. There are people out there that know about them. If you have a concern and it concerns a particular type of industry, financial services, for instance, or you know the government contracting, then the best rule of thumb is you can always go to the agency that supervises it and they'll give you information. Much of that information is also online. I mean, if you pull up whistleblower protection for financial services, pull up whistleblower protection for government contractors. A lot of this information now is pretty easily available bullet point wise online.
And are there financial incentives for people to be whistleblowers?
There are. In addition to the job protections that are in place, and again, most of that goes to if you've been fired, getting your job back with back pay, perhaps reinstatement. But if the chemistry is so bad there, then the court may or agency may allow front pay in lieu of reinstatement and some cost and attorney's fees. So the person is not out the cost of getting a lawyer to assist them. That's the general type of employment relief that's available. But financially, most of these statutes, whether it's reporting somebody for tax fraud under the IRS, for government contracting fraud under the False Claims Act, there's a percentage recovery that the whistleblower can share in the recovery. You know, often these recoveries are tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars in the defense and pharmaceutical examples. The government has, as a matter of policy, as opposed to not learning about it at all, they'll pay, you know, a pretty good, you know, it's usually 10 to 30% depending on the statute.
Assuming there's someone who is a whistleblower and you get retaliated against and fired for blowing the whistle, are there time periods within which you have to file your lawsuit against your employer? How important are those?
Very important, and historically they've had some pretty short timelines. One of them, under Sarbanes-Oxley, the limitation period was very short, and it's been expanded recently. But limitations time periods as short as 90 days, which is very unlike what we see with normal claims that are usually anywhere from a year to 2 years to as much as 5 years with a written contract in Virginia. So these are very, very short timelines. Now, recent, after the financial crisis, the timelines have been expanded under many of these laws. So whereas some of the timelines were 90 days, they've now been doubled to 180 days. That's still pretty short, 6 months. But some of the other laws have been expanded to a 3-year limitation period, which, again, each statute has a different timeline, and it's important if anybody has this, very important not to sleep on your rights and to let it go more than a month before you talk to somebody to find out exactly what date you should put on the calendar.
And obviously very important to talk with an attorney who knows about whistleblowing. And I guess my final question is, in the overall scheme of things, how important is whistleblowing?
I believe that in order to further the policies that these primarily federal laws, but there are some state laws, the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayers Act being one, further these policies, the truth is that without internal whistleblowers who expose this, the public gets cheated of the money. People who are given the public trust of these financial services dollars or these securities dollars and who misuse them would likely never be found out. There's some testimony that recently to, I believe it was a Senate subcommittee, that said that of the recoveries of this type of, I think this was financial services fraud, that something like 41% of the fraud was uncovered by whistleblowers and audits. And, you know, all companies are required to have internal and external auditors, and they do a very good job. But auditors in those same situations only uncovered something like 4% of the fraud. So where companies are trying to deceive the government or deceive the regulatory bodies, I think they are much more successful in doing that unless somebody on the inside comes forward to expose it.
Thank you very much. We have been speaking with Harris Butler at the law firm of Butler Royals in the Shaco Slip near downtown Richmond. We've been talking about whistleblowing. Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 50, which deals with partnerships. Usually, if you transact business in Virginia, those transactions are under the jurisdiction of Virginia court. But not if you're a limited partnership conducting certain types of business. Code of Virginia Section 50-73.61 lists 12 transactions that do not constitute transacting business in Virginia. These include producing, directing, filming, crewing, or acting in a film, TV series, or commercial sent outside of Virginia for processing, editing, marketing, and distribution, as long as the activity was for a period of less than 90 consecutive days. So, Mr. Spielberg, if you use a limited partnership to film Lincoln, you're off the hook. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Ever wonder where you can go to get quick, low-cost, and effective justice? Join us next week when the Honorable Robert Pastelnik, City of Richmond General District Court Judge, reveals the ins and outs of the Small Claims Court, often called the People's Court, in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on September 15, 2010. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.